was watching Drive to Survive, and Toto Wolff, who is the team principal for Mercedes, said data doesn't make the decision, the people do, but the people can't often make the decision without the data.
Welcome back to Caring for the Future, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology and care. We've revamped our show to bring you even more insights and expertise in bite-sized chunks.
And don't worry, our previous host Richard is still around and I'm sure he'll be popping in occasionally, but obviously as our chief executive of 2IC Care, he is rather busy.
I'm tech sector newbie and the new marketing executive at 2IC Care, Alex Fulcher, and I have a lot to learn, so I'm jumping straight in the deep end and co-hosting this podcast. But as you may have guessed, I'm not being left alone to my own devices.
No, I'm Holly Jameson and I've been in the technology-enabled care sector for over a decade, which makes me sound super old, so we'll just go with over 10 years. And I'm now product manager at 2IC Care. Very excited to be here and co-hosting with the lovely Alex.
So today's episode is all about why everyone should care about technology-enabled care. And as a new person to the sector, I knew absolutely nothing about it before.
Obviously, I've had the pleasure of going straight into the industry. It's been the most of my career, really, so I've not really known a lot else. And we thought it could be interesting to start with why we care since we chose the topic. So Alex, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So I think when I met Richard and I heard about his story, which many of you may have heard about, many of our listeners may have heard about already, but about caring for his mum whilst she was in New Zealand and finding that a real struggle, which I think a lot of people can relate to. And it's something I could relate to as my parents moved over from Ireland to London and they have to care for their parents. And it's a real struggle because you aren't getting the right information. You have no idea the kind of care that they're getting. You don't get to see them all the time. And there's this real guilt as well, I think, that comes with trying to care for the people that cared for you when you were growing up. So it was a really relatable story, I think, when I met Richard. And I also like the fact that it's, you know, technology-enabled care is ever-changing and it seems a super challenging sector. I do love a challenge. I am quite partial to one. So it did seem like the great fit, really, for me to really make a difference in people's lives. And it's something that affects everyone. Richard always says that everybody has a story. Everybody can relate to this.
Definitely.
And so I just think the fact that it's challenging, ever changing, and that it really makes a difference, that's what really, really drew me in. Well, what about you, Holz? Because you've been in pretty much every role possible, I feel like.
I have. And it's been, 10 years. I can't believe that when you asked me the other day. It's just mental. But yeah, so I started in basically an admin role. It was a temp role. I saw that it was NHS and I thought, you know what? That sounds quite interesting. I was 20. I didn't really know what I was going to want to do. And then I realized it was actually for a falls prevention service at the time. So that was like exercise classes, basically signposting people onto things to prevent falls after they'd had one. Now, then that sort of took me into many different areas of, so one of them was the ARC monitoring, so being a call operator, found that really interesting. And it was just quite nice being able to do something. Talking to older people was always quite a nice thing because they're just so lovely and you'd get some really super funny ones. And then it just sort of took off from there, really. So I was doing sort of multi-skilled roles of, you know, sometimes doing operations, sometimes answering calls, sometimes installing. And then basically just sort of worked my way up from there, became a team leader, and then became a manager, and then basically worked in the service provider part for the majority of my career, and then have now moved over to the supplier side, which is very, very different. And yeah, it's definitely a challenge, but it's very exciting. I mean, from my side, why I sort of care about technology-enabled care, so I care about technology in general. So a bit of background as to why I like technology is when I did my university degree, one of my favorite things that really stood out to me was lean management, Lean Six Sigma, which is basically how you take process waste out of a process and make things better. Now, obviously, a lot of the time that is done through technology. So you can sort of think about how it's done in a general term, but then you apply that to the health sector or care sector, and you can remove the need for manual tasks and reduce process waste by introducing technology. But in the care sector, it's freeing that time up to do better care or to have more hands-on time with patients of being able to do the things that you need to do rather than the things that technology can do. So it goes hand in hand with my passion with also my job.
And now for Holly's Tech Hero of the Week.
Well, Holly, I know that every week you're going to be bringing us a tech hero. So I'm really excited to hear who it is, and I hope that will give me lots to learn about, lots of people to think about. So who's your one this week?
So our one this week is Dr. Hugo Gernsback. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Not many people would have done. So he was an American inventor, but also a science fiction publisher as well. So he was sort of mainly known for his very wacky inventions, some of them very criticised. But basically, the reason this is relevant is because, in theory, he sort of predicted telemedicine back in the 1900s. So one of his inventions, which I absolutely love, is called the teledactyl, which, look it up, it's quite fascinating. So he actually invented the first at-home radio. So he was using radio and television to create a screen that a doctor would be able to use, basically to be able to reach patients from a distance using robotic arms. So I know, just go with me here. So he would, so on one side, now this is, if you think about relating this to where we're at now, of that he predicted that we would need to predict and be able to reach patients from a distance. Mm. So there would be robotic arms that the doctor on one side would be coordinating, but see the patient on a screen and be able to touch that patient with the arms. And it would be sensitive to like heat, and they would be able to feel resistance as well. So I don't think it ever really took off, because at the time, although he felt that there was the tools and everything to use to create it, television obviously wasn't available at that point. But my point is that he predicted the fact that telemedicine would be a thing. The doctor, you know, the average doctor would not have time to A, visit their patients at home, and sometimes patients wouldn't be able to get into the surgery. And, you know, this is exactly where we're at these days, is that there are a lot of patients and not enough doctors to see everyone. So the whole virtual ward scenario, being able to access people within remote areas, is telemedicine these days. So yeah, it was a fascinating invention. Writer of the Amazing Stories magazine or something like that. So look him up. Very fascinating inventions, but that one really stood out.
And so did he actually invent them for the time period? Was he able to actually...
It was a concept and a theory.
Ah, I see.
So his theory was the fact that that needed to happen. And he did believe that at that point in time, they did have the materials to be able to, you know, radio was a thing. Mm-hmm. And he'd obviously proved that. But it would have needed a television screen. And I just don't think it was quite there yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that sort of thing hasn't been... There are things similar, you know, there are now... If you think about it, that was in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
And now we have technology where surgeries can be conducted from a distance with astronauts that are in space.
Yes.
But how far between, you know, his invention or his creation or theory to now, he basically predicted that in a, you know, far in advance. But yeah, fascinating.
That's so incredible to think that he just sort of came up with that was going to be needed. I suppose we could call him the father of telemedicine, could we?
Absolutely. Why not? Why not? He didn't get a lot of credit for it. He has no credit for it now, that the technologies that have been created to do those sorts of things. So let's just remember Hugo.
I think it's a really interesting topic to talk about because, as we said, I think technology-enabled care is something that I didn't realise, but it pretty much affects everyone involved, you know, and everyone is sort of related to it. The most obvious people that it's related to are the service users. Their care is enhanced when you're using that technology to really sort of make the personalized care a little bit better, really. We can give them the information to really act on all of those insights. So I think that that's really useful. And then obviously family and friends, like that's one of the things that we talk about a lot because, as we said, you know, Richard was talking about his mum and I think about my parents and their parents. And it's really hard supporting an older person that needs care consistently. And especially if you can't be there all the time, it's, you know, how are you supposed to know what they actually need? And also because they might not always be telling you exactly what they need. Yep. So that's really difficult as well. We can't always rely on the service users themselves to tell us exactly what they need. Obviously, some people, you absolutely can. They know exactly what they need and they'll definitely tell you. You know, it affects us all. We're all family and friends of an older person.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, like frontline carers, so the people that are actually caring for the people, there's, you know, there is a shortage of carers. It is a massive problem. So to be able to support them with technology, it's not about replacing, and I'm sure that we'll have some sort of podcast episode on that in the future, but yeah, it's not about replacing. I think that's really important for people to understand. It is about supporting them so they can do and offer the best care possible. And also about the decision making, to support with decision making. So this is, you know, obviously I knew that was doing the podcast today. I was watching Drive to Survive last night for Formula One. I'm a massive Formula One fan. And Toto Wolff, who is the team principal for Mercedes, said something that really resonated for me today, was that data doesn't make the decision, the people do, but the people can't often make the decision without the data. So when you think of NHS, emergency services, the ambulance service, police, etc., you know, the button and box has been around for a really, really long time. And someone presses their button because they need help or they've sat on it. You know, let's face it, there's been an amount of people I've turned up to as a responder and they're fast asleep and they have no idea I'm there. Mm-hmm. But when the ambulance call comes through as an ARC operator, you're asked a series of questions and you're asked, where are they? Are they breathing? Do you know this? Do you know that? And a lot of the time you just don't know, especially if they've got a button and a box. It's like, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And then they have to obviously send someone. Now, imagine if you could say, they're in the living room, I can see their heart rate, this has happened, this has happened, this has happened. That categorising of calls, it just opens up so many doors just through the use of technology in someone's home. And especially, like you said, people that can't communicate and say, I'm here, I'm there, or I've bumped my head, or whatever's happened. Technology is there to basically enhance that whole process from start to finish, like from service users to the people dealing with and caring for the person. And obviously local authorities, that's massively relevant too as well, because they're the ones procuring the technology that goes into the service user's home that then communicates out to the ARC operators and also to the ambulance service. So it's a full circle. So going back to my point about lean management, and you know, I can bore you to death with that all day, but that process waste of enhancing a process or using statistical methods, that was one of my favorite things, of to basically look at the process and where there's variation, cut it out and make it more consistent, which is what technology enabled care can do.
And so one thing that you mentioned there obviously is about local authorities, and I mean something that they're having to look at right now is the analog to digital deadline.
Yeah,
there's a change that they have to make and they have no option.
Mm-hmm. And there's an opportunity, isn't there, of you can do the same sort of thing that we've done for a really long time. Obviously, I've been in the industry for a while now, over 10 years. and I've seen it evolve in some areas, but not evolve in other areas. And this presents, obviously, a massive challenge to everybody, local authorities, service users, everyone. But it also presents a massive opportunity to do something different, something better, to enhance not only all the people we've talked about, service users' lives, operational efficiencies as well, which again, I'm sure we could do a whole podcast just on that alone. But navigating from analog to digital, yes, you go from one thing to another, but why not just do it really well and enhance the technology to be able to get more data, make better decisions, quicker decisions, and be more efficient.
This is Alex's Analog to Digital Deadline.
So each week I'm going to be doing a countdown to the Analog to Digital Deadline. So we're using today's date until the 31st of December 2025, which should be the sort of end of the Analog to Digital transition. And so this week I'm going to start with a really simple one, and we're just going to do the number of minutes until the deadline.
My goodness, Alex.
So the number of minutes until the analog to digital deadline is, okay, bear yourselves, everyone, bear with, 1,483,760 minutes from now until the 31st of December 2025, which makes it sound like a long time, but it's actually not that far away.
No, it's not.
It's not. We've actually, you know, it's going to come quickly. Think how quickly the rest of this year's gone already. It's quite terrifying, actually.
Yeah, it is.
We're already in March. Horrific. So that's the analog to digital countdown for today. So apart from the analog to digital deadline, mm-hmm. which obviously is massive, I suppose we need to think about exactly why we should care about it.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about the people that it affects and why we care. But I think, obviously, you've spoken about it already, and one of the main things is just providing better care. I mean, I think that's just the first thing that we want to think about, because the care sector is an incredible sector full of incredible people that really want to go out and help people. But as we said, you know, the data is the thing that we're going to use to make that care better.
Yeah.
And we can use that every day. And that's something that also sort of leans into providing better care, is when we have that data from an individual, we can have that personalized care element into it as well. And I know personalized and outcome focused care is a massive topic in the sector at the moment.
Yep.
And personalized care makes so much sense because it's not one size fits all.
No.
You can't just have, you know, the button and the box, as you've said, as we've had for a while, because people don't need the same type of care.
No.
All these different conditions, all these different people, you know, you need different things for everyone.
Yeah. Well, it's like, imagine if you went to, you think about it in your own life, which is what we should do, because we sort of almost like isolate the technology-enabled care cohort type of, like, it's very stereotypical sometimes.
Well, whereas, we're all going to get older. We're all going to be there.
Exactly. Imagine you knowing that, you say you go into a phone shop and they're like, you have to have this Android phone, or you have to have this iPhone. You can't have the latest model because you've got to have the same as these five other people.
Mm.
You'd be so frustrated. Like, it just wouldn't happen, and it doesn't happen because it's about choice.
Yes.
You know, you might prefer iPhone, I prefer Android, and that's just personalized to you and I, and you wouldn't expect anybody to tell you any different. And if you're, you know, you then need a set of headphones, I need something else. It's just about what you need. So the technology-enabled care industry should be no different whatsoever.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and very much relate to that as an Android user that gets a lot of abuse for that.
I'm not surprised you do. I might abuse you now.
And that's just a preference. You know, it's a personal preference. And as you say, it makes me more comfortable. I mean, honestly, I'd have a keypad phone if I could. They just don't have them anymore.
I miss Blackberries. I do.
Well, I can't say I quite miss Blackberries.
There'll be someone that's listening that does.
And I think as well, as you're saying, with the personalised outcome, and, you know, when you're able to make that choice and really think about what kind of care you need. And I do think, especially in the health sector, I think that people are moving towards that. I do think GPs are kind of asking, you know, what do you want? What do you think the right course of action is? Because mm-hmm. also, if you believe in the right course of action, it often has a better outcome anyway. Yeah. But it really empowers people to take control of their own care.
Yeah.
And I think as you get older and you sort of lose that independence, whether that's because of a mental state or any long-term conditions, then that's a really disconcerting thing. Really frustrating.
Yeah, and you want to be able to explore options of, you know, technology has without a doubt enhanced experiences for people. It's made it possible for people of all walks of life, all conditions, be able to revert back to some sort of normality, whether it's a mobility issue, like you said, or a mental health issue, to have some sort of technology, whether it's from an app to a physical device. It absolutely can help people enhance their care and their own independence. It's not just about, oh, I've now got this long-term condition, I've got to live with it for the rest of my life. Yes, you do have to live with it, but you can use technology and other ways to sort of just to try and move on and live a normal life.
Exactly. And it can give you that, as we say, that power back. You know, it gives you that independence back. And that's a really, really important thing.
Yeah.
And as we said, we're all going to get older. Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the aging population is something that we hear so much about because despite what we hear also about the health and care sectors, we are getting better and the technology is improving. So our life expectancies are improving and they are getting longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something that is going to affect us all even more than it already is.
Yeah.
So as we get older and older, the need for care is going to become more and more important. So that's just part of the reason why it's such an important issue to talk about.
Definitely. And so, yeah, I guess another one as well is about, we talk about a lot about cost. And one of the things I think in the adoption of technology, there's two factors really, I guess. It's about, there is a massive culture change piece, which again, everyone is aware of. And where that goes across the board to all, again, those cohorts of people we were talking about earlier, service users themselves of, oh, technology, you know, oh gosh, it's got a camera on it. It doesn't have a camera on it. It's okay. It's just, you know, it's there to just be in the background. but also, you know, carers of that use of technology. It is a scary thing. Again, we talk about that whole worry about being replaced. It's not about being replaced. You know, in certain circumstances, there are opportunities to increase efficiencies with technology, but it's not about being replaced. It's about being supported. And by resource shifting because of the use of technology, there are costs to be saved. 100% there are. We've seen it ourselves. We've done pilots, really successful pilots, that have had great cost savings. It's almost about spending better, spending wiser. Obviously, budgets we know are constantly, particularly for local authorities, budgets are always being stripped, if you like. Every year there's a saving to be made. So to increase the use of technology, there is an invest-to-save part about that as well. You know, you have to spend money to save money in a way, but that is also, you know, goes hand in hand with the culture change. But, you know, we've seen technology help carers. Once you break that culture change barrier, and it is a barrier, this whole, whether it's a budget barrier, a culture change barrier, there is one.
Or both.
Or both, yeah, both at the same time, absolutely, which makes it even more challenging. But we've seen, you know, I've seen firsthand starting a project with someone saying either this isn't going to work or I'm just not sure about it, I'm a bit scared about it, to then they get the results, it's helped them in their role, it's helped them in their life, whatever, and then they go, ah, I see it now. And then they're like, how much can I, you know, where can we get this elsewhere? How many settings can we put this in to really sort of drive that change? And that all comes from the power of data. You know, the more data you get, the more you want. And that's what we really believe in. We've seen it firsthand. The power of data is immense, really. And that is across health and social care. And we're starting to see services merge. At the moment, it's very separate. A lot of the time, health and social care being different. But we're seeing people sort of have that integrated service where you can share data, you know, amongst services to create better care for the individuals that we're caring for.
So we're talking about sort of saving money and that link to sort of the NHS as well. We had a case study, I believe, that we had some sort of...
Oh, we've had plenty of case studies, Alex. I mean, we've had a case that we've had lots. But yeah, so we have had, I mean, again, like that power of data part of that, we've had it from preventing a serious kidney infection, preventing a hospital admission by having data just simply on one data point of bathroom visits. And, you know, that's something that is relevant for all of us, doesn't matter what age you are. And yeah, being able to see a change because of data, as in average data versus now new data, and saying this person is acting unusual or out of their norm, being able to go, okay, well then that suggests that maybe they need to go to the GP. GP uses that data as well. Again, going back to that health, you know, supporting clinicians and going, oh, okay, the GP would never have had that. They would have had, I've been going to the bathroom a lot. Or they might not have even had that. They might have had it to the point of, I've been feeling unwell lately. And then you've got a track back of where, you know, to find out what the problem is. Whereas to have the data of bathroom visits goes, okay, we'll do a urine dip test. And then saying, yep, you've clearly got a UTI, antibiotics, no further hospital admission. Now, you take that back to what could have happened without, you know, more enhanced technology of it gets so bad that the service user has a fall, is really unwell, very disorientated, presses their button, goes through to the ARC are asking lots of different questions, the person's still disorientated, and you just have missed out on the whole story. Mm. And it's ended up being a hospital admission because it's got, you know, kidney infections can be nasty, yeah, no matter what age you are, but especially in older people. So yeah, power of data, exactly my point.
Well, I think that's a great place to finish. I mean, very powerful place to finish for today. And so that's a wrap on our first episode, or not first episode, but the first episode of the revamp of Caring for the Future. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in as we explored why technology in care matters for everyone. Join us next time for more insights and discussions on navigating the future of care. And we are very excited to speak to Charlotte Dugdale from the TSA next time and hear all about the upcoming iTech, what to expect, and dig into sort of the themes of the conference.
Yeah, and don't forget to subscribe to get all the latest and be able to suggest topics and ask questions. That would be fab. And remember, whether you're a seasoned pro like me or a newcomer like Alex, there's always something new to learn in the dynamic world of tech. Until next time, take care.